From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Benjamin Schuler from the University of Zurich is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about protein misfolding and human disease.
Dr. Benjamin Schuler is a professor of biochemistry at the University of Zurich. His research is focused on the folding, misfolding, and dynamics of proteins using a combination of biochemical and spectroscopic methods, in particular, single-molecule fluorescence technology. Dr. Schuler, before we talk about your recent paper in Nature, would you explain how various illnesses or diseases can result from misfolded proteins?
In general, there are two basic mechanisms how misfolded proteins can cause diseases. The first one is a simple loss of function. So if a protein cannot reach its properly folded three-dimensional structure, it can no longer exert its function. So most proteins come in these well-defined three-dimensional structures, and you can imagine that a very specific arrangement of the atoms in the protein molecule are required to perform a very specific function. And if a protein cannot reach the structure, it can no longer perform its function. So that's what we call a loss of function. The second possibility that's closely connected is aggregation. So the accumulation of proteins in deposits in the cells, for instance, which can then be cytotoxic, kill other cells, or lead to other defects.
Can you give us some examples of some specific diseases resulting from misfolded proteins and how that misfolding actually caused those diseases?
Yeah, so let me give you examples for the two cases that I just mentioned. So for a loss of function variant, for instance, would be cystic fibrosis. So that's a case where a very important transmembrane protein, the so-called CFTR, contains a mutation, and this mutation has the effect the protein no longer can reach its folded structure, and so it can no longer perform its function, and as a result, there's a progressive disability of the patients, very often lung infections, and very frequently, very early death. The second example for the second case for aggregation, or so-called amyloid diseases, these are often neurodegenerative diseases. The most famous examples are probably Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. So in this case, we have a clustering or aggregation of certain proteins or fragments of proteins that then accumulate in the cell or outside of cells. And the favorite current hypothesis why this aggregation leads to disease is that relatively small species, relative small aggregates of these peptides or proteins form and then, for instance, penetrate the membrane or have other reasons why they cause disease.
What was the purpose of your study that appeared in Nature?
The fundamental problem really is that it is very difficult to avoid misfolding and aggregation. And the reason is that the same kinds of interactions that mediate or stabilize the properly folded native structure, right? So that is the interactions within a protein. These interactions are very similar to the types of interactions that can form between proteins or fragments or parts of proteins. So as examples, this would be, for instance, the hydrophobic interaction, hydrogen bonds, charge interactions, and the like. And so the question that we were asking is, are these non-native interactions, so these interactions between proteins or parts of proteins that lead to misfolding, are they specific or promiscuous or random, right? You can think of it in terms of if they are specific, there must be a very similar pattern of interactions that keeps proteins together. And that's, for instance, something that we see in many amyloid diseases. That's where this seems to be the case. Or the alternative would be that these interactions are sort of random. So you could think of it maybe in terms of a bunch of scrambled spaghetti where you just sort of randomize interactions and they just stick together in a very non-specific way. And that's what we were trying to address.
And how did you go about investigating the circumstances under which this misfolding occurred? And could you describe some of the specific steps you followed to undertake this research?
Yeah, so what we did is we used a very large protein called titin, which is actually the largest protein in the human body, or the largest single polypeptide chain in the human body, which is a muscle protein. And this protein is made up of individual domains. So these are structural units of a protein that can fold by themselves without the rest of the protein. And so we took domains of this protein, or parts of this protein, and put them together in different combinations. And these domains all look structurally very similar, but their sequences can be very different. And so we made these combinations of these domains. We combined two or three of these domains, expressed them in Escherichia coli. So we made these proteins in bacterial cells, purified them from these cells, and we compared the protein coming directly from the cellular machinery as it's produced in the cell, and compared that with protein that we refolded in the test tube. So the way that works is that you take the protein, you add agents like gadolinium chloride or urea that destabilize the native structure. The protein is unfolded, as we say. And then you can just dilute out this denaturant, and the protein will spontaneously refold. And when it does that, it turns out that part of this protein's misfold, and we can then vary the conditions or vary the combinations of these domains to find out under which conditions misfolding happens.
And what type of technology did you rely upon to carry out this research, and why did you choose this particular technology?
So altogether, this project is quite interdisciplinary. It's a combination of protein engineering, spectroscopy, and molecular simulations. But the key technology that we used is single-molecule fluorescence, and more specifically, single-molecule FLIT. And this is a very sensitive method to measure distances in protein molecules on a molecular scale. So we can measure distances that are in the nanometer range, so that's a millionth of a millimeter, and we can in this way really get information about the arrangement of the protein in its specific structure, and we can compare what the protein looks like in its properly folded state and in its misfolded state, and we can do this even if only a small part of these proteins misfold. So in the usual classical type of non-single molecule, or what we could say ensemble experiment, this would sort of get lost in the large amount of signal that you have from other proteins, but with this specific technique, we can really get structural information even about small subpopulations of the molecules in our solution that we're investigating.
What were the main findings and conclusions of your research paper?
There are two main findings. The first one is that we could clarify the arrangement of the protein in its misfolded structure. And so what we found was that it's really, in this misfolded structure, we have very native-like interactions. So the parts of the protein that come together and form this misfolded structure form interactions that are very similar in their patterns to the kinds of interactions you have in the properly folded state. So which means they're very specific combinations of molecular contacts. And this might be very similar also in protein aggregation. And the second major conclusion is that if we combine protein domains with different degrees of sequence similarity, right? So I mentioned that these domains all have essentially the same three-dimensional structure, but the sequence of amino acids that make up the protein is different from domain to domain. And what we found was that the more similar these domains are, the more misfolding takes place. And this supports a previous bioinformatics study where it's been found that if you look at all domains in natural proteins that contain many of these domains, and if you look at neighboring domains, you find that these neighboring domains typically have a very low sequence similarity. So it really looks like an important evolutionary strategy to avoid misfolding is to make sure that protein domains that are close together have a low sequence similarity to reduce a possibility of misfolding.
Now, what are the clinical implications of this work, and what future projects do you have in mind to take this research and move it to the next stage?
So I think the very important questions that will now have to be addressed are to understand which conditions boost or inhibit misfolding. So some of the most important factors that we will look at is, for instance, the role of other proteins in the cellular environment, especially for instance, molecular chaperones, which are other proteins, little molecular machines that apparently avoid aggregation and misfolding. And it will now be very important to see whether the cellular machinery that is has evolved to keep proteins intact in the cell is really able to avoid this misfolding and how. And so for clinical applications, it we suspect at the moment, or we strongly suspect, that similar mechanisms to what we found here may be at work in these aggregation diseases that I mentioned. And so for any directed therapeutic intervention, it will be important to understand the underlying mechanisms. And so we hope that this will help to identify factors that can inhibit misfolding and aggregation and might eventually lead to therapy. This will not be tomorrow, but more on the longer run. But as all of these misfolding diseases are becoming an increasingly serious problem for our aging populations, this is clearly absolutely necessary to understand these processes better.
And what research projects do you have in mind to take this research forward?
Yeah, so specifically we will now try to combine the experiments that we have done that are described in our paper to the next level by combining them with cellular factors that we can actually purify. So we'll purify these molecular chaperones, for instance, other cellular factors, investigate how this process of misfolding takes place in the cell and how it may be avoided in the cell, which mechanisms are at work.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.